Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Senator Laura Kelly, 18th District, which is Topeka and Wamego and some parts of Wabunsee County.
I'm ever so pleased that you've made the long drive, and we're going to get more with Laura right after the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. And joining Laura and me today in the KCUR production studio, Gene Chavez from Shawnee. Thanks for being here.
Glad to
be
here.
And my KCUR colleague, Lisa Rodriguez, who's also a producer just down the hall at Up to Date. Lisa, thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
All right. Given that it's 100 degrees outside, and this usually leads to a paucity of news, I have to say I'm a little surprised about how busy it is out there. And we have a number of things we want to cover today. But we start with our two favorite questions. Laura, first, tell me about your kids and your pets and how you managed to find your way into politics in Kansas.
Well, I have two grown daughters, Kathleen, who lives in Philadelphia.
Where?
She lives actually on Society Hill, Pine Street.
Pine, what in Pine? Pine and what?
She lives, it's...
I lived in Philadelphia for a long time.
316 Pine.
Yeah, so I get very excited when I hear somebody from Philadelphia.
You are stretching my...
I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. All right, go ahead.
Okay,
so you got
anyway,
the one daughter in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, who's starting up her own business. And then my younger daughter lives in Portland, where she's in her third year of medical residency.
Wow. Pets?
One crazy cat, Francis.
I'm always interested. How did you land on the name Francis for your cat?
It is my confirmation name.
That's my favorite cat story ever. And then how'd you find your way into politics?
Probably location. When I moved to Topeka, I moved into a very political neighborhood. My neighbor next door was my state rep. Around the corner was my state senator. My whole social life centered around fundraisers for them.
Well, I want to get around the table here, but first, Matt Hodapp, who produces the show, wanted me to make sure to ask you just so you're the minority whip in the Kansas Senate, and he wants me to make sure we know what a whip does. And by the way, you get a little extra dough for that?
Nope, the whip gets nothing. the whip technically is the vote counter. And in a caucus of eight, it's pretty easy for me to do that job. I don't need high math skills.
No, you just your fingers is what.
Don't even need my toes.
Is what you need for that. All right, let's go around the table. Gene Chavez, what's on your mind?
When I think about all the issues that we as Kansans face, I still have a deep concern about the equity issues of our state. I think we've been known as a state that is welcoming to the sojourners, the immigrants, the pull factors over the many years, everything from, our opening the doors to Mexican immigrants who helped build the railroads, to fuel the working force for agriculture, and the packing house, meat packing industries. So Kansas has always been at least a relatively welcoming state compared to, say, let's Missouri, who's doing a lot of anti-immigrant type legislation recently, especially with their college student legislation. And Kansas still has the DREAM Act. It barely survived this last session, thanks to you and Luis and other legislators there who fought, and institutions of higher education that fought for it because they realized that, hey, it's not a humane approach to just cut young people off who really, for the most part, are Americans lacking the citizenship. So I'm concerned about equity issues in our state. And I know when budget cuts come, sometimes those are the first programs that are cut, programs to help the Dreamers, for example, and other young people, English language learners in our schools, Even though there are allocations from the federal government for English language learners, how states handle those monies becomes a very important issue.
Laura, do you have the same concern? I think what I'm hearing Gene say is that maybe we're becoming, well, it pains regressive. Me to say this, but yeah, but a little less friendly, a little less, you know, sort of in my view, and I readily admit that I'm smug about being from Kansas, that we are maybe not as Kansan as we used to be.
You know, Sam, I really don't think that Kansans have changed. I think that they continue to be a welcoming, open people. I do think the legislature has changed, and that's unfortunate.
But isn't the legislature a reflection of the people who send them there?
Well, it's definitely a reflection of the people who send them there. But if you look back, a lot of the seats that get filled in the Senate and the House are filled during the primary time. And the people who come out to vote in the primary time are generally those more avid ideologues. So what we have in the legislature, you know, are people who really were elected by a narrow group and continue to bring those kinds of beliefs and ideology into the Senate and act accordingly. I think the fact that we didn't pass the anti-student law this past session is good news. That means that there are enough of us there who do represent what I think is a majority of Kansans.
Yeah. Lisa Rodriguez, your final thought here, or your final question.
Well, this is kind of an unrelated topic to what we've been talking about so far, but something that's been on my mind, especially yesterday on the show that I produced Up to Date, we had a discussion about the culture of a capital culture in Missouri, and we had amid accusations of sexual harassment and a conversation with a few interns, a lawmaker there and a former lawmaker, Sandra Reeves, who talk about sexual harassment being almost a commonplace culture in the Missouri Capitol. And it was something that was shocking to me. And I wonder, is that something that is pervasive among, you know, capitals across the country? Is that something that as a woman you experience in Kansas? And why not, if not?
You know, I don't see that as much in Topeka mm-hmm. as I read about in Jefferson City. I think there really are some different cultures in Missouri versus Kansas legislatures, and I just don't see that. As a woman in the Senate, I have never felt harassed. I mean, maybe they wouldn't dare. I don't see it as an issue. I think that would be an interesting question, though, to ask our young female interns. You know, and our young female legislators, they might have a totally different perspective than I do.
Why do you mm-hmm. think the culture, and you know what, Steve Kraske and I talked about this, and I've talked about it with other reporters who have covered both state houses, and I think we all agree that there really is a different feel and a different culture in Topeka. And so why do you think that is?
You know, I'm not sure why it's like that, but you know, Missouri, in some ways, feels more like Illinois, New Jersey, you know, than Kansas, which feels more like Nebraska, Iowa, and it could just be that separation of the river, and you just come up with a different statewide culture. I mean, I just think that it is very different. Missouri was a southern state. And Kansas was not, and it might have started as far back as that.
Just drinking different water.
We just developed differently.
Well, and I think that Missouri, having been a southern state and being maintaining much of that culture, you know, in especially in the Boot Hill area and south east Missouri, you know, it feels much more like a southern state. It, you cross over the state line into Memphis, Tennessee, and it just doesn't seem any different on both sides of those state lines. So I think there is a different. I think the whole issue of sexual harassment has to do with power and how sometimes people feel that they have power over others, and especially, you know, an innocent intern. Yeah, I can take advantage of her because I have that power over her, and I think that distribution of power issue is very much at the heart of that, how people perceive their ability to wield power and not have to obey the rules, not have to live by the rules that others have to.
Yeah, I'm wondering, And this topic has always intrigued me. Is there and there's clearly a difference in night and day to some degree in the history of the politics in both Kansas and Missouri. Missouri really does have a history of bossism, ward politics, you know, at its dirtiest, really. Kansas really it comes out of a history of populism. And I'm wondering if that, do you think, has an effect on the culture, right? I mean, just walking into the building in Jefferson City, when you walk into that Capitol, for me, I always feel like, you know, there's something, you know, if I look not too hard, I'm going to find something lurking behind the door. So do you think there's something, you think that has something to do with it? And it just has manifested itself in this ugly way?
Well, I think there are backroom politics in every state. I mean, I don't want to pretend that nothing like that ever happens in Kansas, too. But I do think that if you think back, I mean, Kansas elected the first woman to a position. I think it was the mayor of Argonia. You know, women have always held positions of authority, responsibility, power in the state of Kansas. I think that's equalized our relationship with our male colleagues. And I think that the women, maybe because of that, you know, we just naturally act as mentors to the next generation of women coming up. And whether that mentorship or attention protects them a little bit from what might be, you know, normal human behavior or usual human behavior, I don't know. But I do think that there's always been a difference in the way that Kansas has seen their women than some other states.
One more trip around the table. I want to hear final thoughts. Gene, what else is on your mind here while we've got the senator with us?
Certainly. Of course, there are a number of issues that I'm concerned about. I've first came to the Kansas City area in 1962, stayed until about 1969 when I went back to Denver, my hometown. I consider Denver my hometown. But then back in 1983, moved back permanently. I've been here since 1983, living in the Overland Park and Shawnee, Kansas area since we came back in 83. One of the things that probably concerns me most, since I'm an educator, my wife's an educator, and we come from a family of educators, is what is happening in the Kansas State House with regards to And the governor's office, of course, to the finances for education. It seems to me like we're on a crash course or a disaster course with regards to educational finance in the state of Kansas. So that would be my top issue, I think.
Right. So your concern here is really the block grants, right? The uncertainty of the funding. Laura?
Well, I think Gene is correct. We are on a disaster course. In fact, I think we've taken off on that course. The block grants are a major problem, particularly for growing school districts, which Johnson County typically has. You know, Olathe just laid off 80 people when Olathe experiences tremendous student growth. And we're seeing that with other communities also. You know, and the block grant represents actually a freezing of the funding at a very low level. You know, we had been decreasing funding for education prior to that, and then we just freeze it there, and that will leave it in place for the next couple of years. We're already seeing our school districts reeling from that.
Yeah. Laura, let me just follow up real quick. So I hear both of you say that we're heading towards a disaster in education. Well, what is that look like? I mean, that feels a little hyperbolic to me to say that we're heading for a disaster. So what does it look like? And I want to let me start with Laura, and I want to hear Gene's thought on this as well. So what does that look like?
Well, I think from an educational point of view and from a parent's point of view and a teacher's point of view, expanding class sizes is the first point of disaster. We know from many, many studies, that class size is very important. You need a good teacher, but you need an adequate number of kids to teach and not too many of them to teach in order to be able to do that. I think the other thing that we're already seeing, it's been all over the news, is the number of teachers fleeing the profession. in Kansas. I think we had 3,700 teachers leave for a variety of reasons. One, to take jobs in Missouri, some retirements, and then some just leaving the profession entirely and going a different path. So that portends disaster.
Yep. And we're going to get back to that. Gene, but what does a disaster look like to you?
I'll just use one case scenario that I think about. My wife taught for many years at Oak Park Carpenter Elementary School, and they now have a big special needs center at Oak Park Carpenter. Trend in public education, of course, is for integrated classrooms with all types of people attending the classroom. But in order to facilitate that and actually make it possible is the whole issue of teacher aides, teacher assistants, especially with severely mentally retarded or other types of children who are challenged in the normal school setting. They need that extra assistant. But one of the first first positions to go are those special needs assistants that facilitate the integration of those children in classrooms. Mm. Where's the money going to come from? Yeah. The districts don't have it, and then the burden of the teacher to try to control a classroom without that special assistant is pretty difficult.
Right. Lisa?
I think, as a product of the Shawnee Mission School District and someone who grew up with great teachers and what I felt was a diverse experience at Shawnee Mission West, it's just this idea that so many teachers are fleeing is something that concerns me, you know, to a great degree. And I wonder what we can do to change that from a legislative standpoint.
So what can we do?
It's going to take money. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt.
But isn't that, and let me just interrupt you just very so briefly here. I mean, isn't that the challenge that you get or the opposite view that that in education everything just takes more money and that's not the answer? But in this case, you're saying it is the answer.
Well, again, you know, the research has been done and the amount of money that one puts into their schools is reflected in outcomes. So I think that's truth. But I think in our particular case in Kansas, because we have cut back our school funding so drastically over the past really 7 years, because we have to look back into the recession, we have to reinfuse that money into the schools to bring them back up. You know, our schools have been sort of piecing it together, and they've been doing a very good job of it, but they've spent down their contingency funds to next to nothing. You know, people have been doing double work, and teachers have been investing their own funds to provide classroom supplies. I mean, there are all sorts of things that have been going on that's just not sustainable. So, yes, Sam, in this case, it will take money, and it'll take a lot of money to put our schools back on the track.
How much money?
Well, you know, the court has suggested that it's upwards of $500 million.
Mm-hmm. What do you suggest?
I'm not going to suggest a figure right now. I think we need to sit down. One, we don't have a school finance formula right now, so it's hard to plug numbers in. But certainly, I think we need to be better than we are now, which we're sort of stuck at 1992 levels in terms of base state aid per pupil.
Yeah. Governor held, and as we sit here on a Saturday morning, Governor held a rather rare news conference yesterday afternoon in Topeka. He addressed this teachers fleeing Kansas issue, and I want to play just a little bit of tape of that and then come back on the other side and talk about it.
We've looked at the numbers on this, because that's what I think you really ought to go off of, is the numbers. And overall, our numbers are not much different than any other state for teachers leaving the profession.
Soundbite, thanks to Cake TV in Wichita for that. So the governor says, and this is a story near and dear to our heart here. We broke it, been following it very closely. Governor says, well, you know what? There's really, teachers aren't really fleeing Kansas. So what do you think, Laura?
Well, I think the numbers speak for themselves, and I haven't done any research on what's happening in other states, but I think we can just compare ourselves to ourselves. And we look at the number of teachers who retired, the number of teachers who took a job in another state, the number of teachers who just left the profession, and we've doubled that in 1 year.
Yeah. Gene, what are your thoughts on this out of a family of educators? Do you anecdotally as you talk to your friends see less interest in teaching in Kansas?
I am actively involved with several educational organizations and working with young people, mentoring young people, and encouraging them to go into the teaching profession. I teach at Donnelly College in their urban education program, preparing teachers for the urban core. And our classes are very small because there are not that many young people thinking about going into the career of teaching. In the Latinos of Tomorrow group, I speak to them regularly. Sponsored by the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, we meet every other Saturday, and I regularly give pitches about, hey, teaching is a wonderful profession, may not be as lucrative as other professions, but the rewards are great, and I may get one or two young people interested. It's just, and I don't know, it's, you know, that's certainly not the governor's fault or anyone else's fault, except for the fact that young people don't see the teaching profession, I think, the way some of us viewed it when we first went into teaching. And it has more negative aspects, and especially when they see funding being cut and the society seemingly not caring about the future of their young people's education.
Yeah. Lisa, you know what? I was relating to what you were saying just a minute ago. I'm a product of the Shawnee Mission School District myself, Shawnee Mission South, although I believe I may have been in school relatively long ago than you have, but still, it hurts me. And there was just at the Shawnee Mission School District, they were just saying that they may have to that they actually don't believe the superintendent Jim Hinson doesn't believe that the state's going to be able to come up with the amount of money that is allocated for block grants, and they're making plans to cut up to $5 million. And I have to say that I took it rather personally.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel the same way. I have a lot of pride still in where I am, where I grew up and where I went to school. And it's, yeah, it hurts.
Yeah. You know, as we're coming to the end of, by the way, hey, Jean, could you just pour me a little bit more coffee there? So we're coming to the end of July. And so in a week or so, thank you, we're going to start seeing revenue numbers. Income tax, sales tax went up in Kansas on July 1st. And now you have educators worried. And Jim Hinson, by the way, you know, he was on the Governor's Efficiency Commission. He's very politically astute. And so when he says something like this, I pay attention. So I'm wondering what you think, Laura, as we're going to see these revenues figures in about a week. How do you think Kansas is going to do? I know this is anecdotal. I know this is just not based on anything that any hard numbers. But what are your thoughts?
Well, it's hard to predict, as we know, because our consensus revenue folks have tried to predict it for months on end and tend to be wrong. Clearly, the sales tax revenues should go up. We're going to have a slew of refunds issued in July that were held for the last couple of months of fiscal year 15. So when it's all said and done, I hope we make projections, but I'm not optimistic.
Yeah. So how are you already thinking about the new session, about what's going to happen? I mean, it just, you know, so often the summer was just a time where I think state government news just went away. But I can't get away from it. So are you already thinking about what's going to be happening?
Yeah, I mean, the reason that we can't stop thinking about it is because we're in a constant state of crisis. You know, every month the revenues are down. Every month, you know, we have to be looking at, you know, some other way of making ends meet. I am looking forward to it. And when I say I'm looking forward to it, I'm thinking about it. You know, this past session, we had an $800 million deficit to make up. We only raised taxes enough to fill $370 million of that. That's a huge amount of money that we used that were one-time sweeps, transfers, the $50 million in cuts that the governor will announce next week. We are going to be facing a huge deficit when we go into fiscal year 16. Now, we've got a two-year budget now, so we've already done our budget for 16 mm-hmm. and 17. But I do expect that we will have to look at allotments, which are cuts, as we go into the new session. just because the revenue, I don't expect that the revenue is going to be there to make up the kind of deficit that we have.
Outstanding. We're going to leave it there. Once again, I am going to leave this podcast far smarter than when I walked in. Jean Chavez from Shawnee, thank you for being here. My colleague Lisa Rodriguez from Up to Date, thank you for being here. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. Hey, by the way, if you missed our All Music show last week where we played some of our favorite close music from the legislative session, go to the iTunes and you can listen to that show now or kcur.org/statehouseblend. By the way, next week we cross the state line, and my friend Brian Ellison will be start doing State House Blend with a Missouri angle, and I'm going to try to keep track of what's going on in Kansas. But as we know, found
out
today,
interesting to see what they say about Kansas.
I think we know what they're going to say. About Kansas. You can, as I mentioned, you can find State House Blend on iTunes, kcur.org. Our friends over there at Up to Date clear out a little room for us every Tuesday at 11. That's still true, right?
That's still true.
Okay, good. And you're going to make sure that happens?
Personally.
I think I appreciate that very much. All right, you like the social media? You guys like the social media?
Yeah,
I thought so. You can follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff. Laura, to get to know you just a smidge better, we're going to close the show as we always do with your favorite tune. What is it?
Well, as of this morning, my favorite tune is Van Morrison's Brand New Day, dedicated to the 2016 races.
You cannot go wrong with Van Morrison. Thanks very much. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you next time.
Young sun begins